As America contemplates its future with a new president, one man has been looking to the past for cues about our future. Robert Kelly is an archaeologist at the University of Wyoming. In his new book, The Fifth Beginning, he argues humanity has encountered four transition points, or beginnings, in its history: the invention of technology, like stone tools, culture, agriculture, and the state. He sat down with me to discuss the transition he says is happening right now.
First thing we should say is, how do we know that we're in a fifth beginning? Because it's hard to recognize a dramatic transition if you're part of it. There was no hunter-gatherer who woke up one morning and said, hey, we're all agriculturalists now. My guess is that in the distant future, my archaeology colleagues will look back on this time and they will see that we are in the midst of another beginning, another time of great change, which began about 500 years ago. It's the era of globalization. It's marked by massive building, by what geologists call the Anthropocene, a massive impact of the human presence on Earth. We see it in the atmosphere, in the CO2 concentrations. We can also see it in things like the concentrations of carbon-14 in the atmosphere, which is a result of above-ground bomb testing.
I think something that kind of plays into it that you mention in the book is that as a species is adapting to one thing, they often become something else. So you mentioned how primates didn't mean to become bipedal. Hunter-gatherers didn't intend to become farmers. Farmers didn't mean to become part of empires. So what could we possibly be becoming?
There are three things at work today. For 5,000 years, we've been on an ever spiraling upward in the cost of war. That's a function of someone developing new offensive weapons, so someone else has to develop new defensive weapons. The cost of war is now phenomenal. And yet that technology can't really be used. I don't think that we can fight another war like World War II, where we accepted massive casualties on our side as well as on the other side. Can you imagine the President of the United States saying, we're going to undertake warfare in some place in the world, and we expect 10,000 casualties? How would the American people respond to that? I don't think they'll accept it. So there's ways in which warfare simply doesn't appear to be worth the benefit given the costs. The other thing that's happening is the global reach of capitalism. Capitalism operates on cheap labor. And the way it's finding cheap labor today is by moving to some part of the world where labor is cheaper. The U.S. moved labor to Japan after World War II. Then it's been moved to Singapore, to South Korea. Now it's in China, it's in India. And China is now building infrastructure in Africa because they fully expect to move their labor at some point to Africa. Africa's the last major landmass that has to have its standard of living raised up, which capitalism always does. Once it does that, there'll be no more cheap labor anywhere in the world. At the same time, capitalism seeks to reduce its labor costs through automation and artificial intelligence. What do we do when there's no more cheap labor and, in fact, industries don't need labor? Who's going to have any money to buy anything? So there's sort of a logical endpoint to that form of a capitalist economy. The third process that's going on is the cultural effects of a worldwide system of communication and transportation. People can experience other cultures immediately through social media, through television, through the radio, but also immediately through the appearance of new people in their neighborhoods, Somalis in Denver, for example. That process is having two effects. One of those, I think we've seen the result of it in the recent election. People are terrified. But there's the opposite reaction as well, where people are interested in cultural diversity. They're attracted to it. It's another way of living, maybe a way that has some solutions for the common problems that we all face. And it makes other cultures purely human. These are three processes that are at work today that their inevitable result will be to restructure the way the world is organized.
And you seem pretty optimistic about that, you know, end of war, global citizenship, the end of capitalism. That on one hand could sound to some people very utopian, to other people very undesirable. But you argue in the book that there is a way forward. Why are you so optimistic?
So I'm not necessarily a terribly optimistic person, but I decided to take that position in the book, in part because if I don't take an optimistic outlook, then there's really no point in even trying. You have to believe that things can get better, that we can create a better world. And I suppose that's part of the message. What's different about the fifth beginning is that we had no control over the first four. No one knew that they were happening. And today, we understand how economies operate. We've got a lot of knowledge, and we've got a great deal of power technologically. We can do almost anything that we want to do. There's no need for us to retreat into isolationism, which is the direction that our country might be taking. It's the direction that the UK took with Brexit. That's one way. That's one way that we can change the world. The easy way is to acknowledge where we're going to be in probably another century or so, which is a world that will have to be unified, that will have to operate economically in a way so that there isn't massive inequality in the world, because that will only generate resentment and fighting. We know how to restructure the world so that that doesn't happen. We can do that now, or we can do that later after a great deal of pain. I'd prefer to do it now.
Robert Kelly is an archaeologist and the author of the book, The Fifth Beginning, which is out now. Thank you, Robert, so much for your time today.
Thank you.